Hello, everybody. This is Parshas Matos Masei. And the Parsha begins telling us the laws of Nedarim. If a person makes a vow, and the Torah tells us that if a woman makes a vow, her husband can annul the vow. He could be made for it. And the Torah says that the woman will be forgiven. V'Hashem yislach lo. If her husband annuls the vow, she'll be forgiven. And Rashi brings the Gemara that asks, what does it mean she'll be forgiven? Of course she's forgiven. She didn't do anything wrong. She made a vow and her husband undid it. Rashi brings the Gemara that says an idea that there's a scenario where a woman can make a vow, a neder, that she won't eat a certain thing. And unbeknownst to her, her husband hears about this neder and he says that he's made for it, he annuls it. Now, meanwhile, she had no idea that he annulled it. And she, without knowing that it was mutter, she ate it thinking she was doing something wrong, but she couldn't control herself and she ate it. So now in that scenario, technically she didn't do anything wrong. She didn't eat something that's actually prohibited because the vow was already annulled, yet she gets punished. Yet she needs kapara. Torah is telling us that she still needs atonement because she ultimately thought she was doing something wrong when she did it. And that's why Torah says, Hashem yislach lah, and God will forgive her. It teaches that there's still a need for atonement just because she did something which she thought at the time was wrong, even though technically it was actually permitted. And the question that all the commentaries struggle with is that we know in general, when it comes to having a bad thought, a bad machshava, a person thinks he plans on doing something bad but doesn't end up doing it, we know that a person is not punished for that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not mitzarif a machshava ra lemaisa. He doesn't punish a person for bad thoughts, only if he does bad deeds. Whereas when a person does good things, even if a person intends to do something good, even if it doesn't end up ultimately happening, he gets reward. So how come here, when it comes to this story of the lady who intended to do something bad, so to speak, she thought this was usher when she ate it, it was prohibited, but really in reality it was fine. Why does she need atonement? So the Sefer Drash Mordechai brings from Rav Shach, the idea as follows. He says that here, what the Torah is talking about, the reason why a person needs to get atonement in such a case is because a person is given life as an opportunity. And every second of life and every energy and every bit of strength a person has in life is supposed to be used to try to do something good, try to accomplish and to do mitzvahs and come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person takes time from his life to go and do something bad, even if ultimately he didn't do anything bad, but he wasted all that time and all that opportunity on trying to do something bad, and he needs atonement for that itself, for the fact that he was spending all his time engaged in something that was not intended for good. And that is the atonement that we need, and that's the atonement that's referred to in this pasuk of Hashem Yislach Lah. Something to think about in life when a person is trying to do something which they know is not a good thing, and it's not working, and it's not going. Cut out the time that you're wasting and trying to do something. Save on that sin and use that time for something positive and something productive. Further on in the parasha, Torah says that when they fought with Midian, it says that these were the people who caused them to sin, Bidvar Bilam. So literally translated that by the word of Bilam means that because Bilam gave them an idea, this advice to go and seduce the Jewish people and cause them to sin and ultimately die from the Magefa, from the plague that Hashem sent to punish them. However, the Mashiach Chachma says a different pshat. He says that Bidvar Bilam isn't referring to the Midianim, it's referring to the Jewish people. The Jewish people ultimately fell and suffered because of the word of Bilam. What does that mean? He says the Medrash tells us that you find that all the Jewish prophets and all the Jewish leaders of the Jewish people, they're always rebuking Klal Yisrael. They're always giving Klal Yisrael rebuke. They're always saying, you're not doing this right, you're not doing that right. Bilam is the first one who comes and says, Lehibit Avim B'Yakov, there's no sin in Israel. Klal Yisrael is amazing. They're doing this, they're doing that right. Everything's perfect. And yet, what do you find? That unfortunately, the second after you have a Dvar Bilam, you have this wonderful praise of Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael goes into one of the biggest calamities, one of the biggest sins that they did as a nation, and they have 24,000 people who die from doing the Avodah Zarah of Baal Peor. And Victor Miller explains, he says, that why is it that the Jewish people are always being criticized by their leaders and not being praised? And why is it that Bilam's praise ultimately makes them fall? And he gives a mashal. He says, imagine you come to a wedding and you see the kala. She's beautiful. She's dressed up gorgeous. She has her makeup on. She's perfect. Yet the photographer is driving her nuts. Tilt your chin. Remove that fleck of dust. He's constantly criticizing her, Why? Because he ultimately wants her to look perfect. He has an eye for every little thing because he wants her to look her absolute best for these pictures that's going to last a lifetime. Bilam, he sees Klai Yisrael. He's like the guy coming to the wedding. Yeah, she looks great. Amazing. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the leaders of Klai Yisrael, they love Klai Yisrael and they want what's perfect for him. And they want Klai Yisrael to look amazing. And they stop and they poke on every little nuance. And therefore, they're always pushing Klai Yisrael to go a little higher. And therefore, says Reb Miller, you find that even when the leaders of Klai Yisrael do praise them, for example, Moshe and Yaakov, when before they die, they give Klai Yisrael brachas. They're never praised as in, you're great and keep going. Their praise is, you're great, so you could do better. You have these powers, you have this potential, use it for what you could use it for. Because praise without any purpose or any meaning, just saying that you're done and you're finished, ultimately leads a person to just kind of let go and start to rot. And specifically when that praise is given with the ability and the intention because you want the person to grow more, that's what brings out the best in Klal Yisrael. Later on and towards the end of Parshas Matos, we have the story of the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. They come to Moshe and they say that they want to take their portion on this side of the Jordan. They don't want to cross over. And Moshe Rabbeinu obviously gets very upset at them and he tells them, that, what do you mean? You're going to ditch everybody else. They ever help fight for your part of Eretz Yisrael. And you're going to just stay here comfortably and let everyone else go fight over there. And the Aruch Hayim asked the obvious question that, you know, what exactly were the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven thinking? Right? Like, what really, like, we're all going to fight for you. We all conquer this side of the Jordan. You're going to take it and we're going to fight by ourselves over there. What was their Havamina, so to speak? What were they thinking? And the truth is, there's another interesting question brought in the Mepharshim. Rashi tells us that if you look, when they divided the country and they set aside special ir miklats, special cities of refuge for somebody who kills by accident, that if a person kills by accident, he has to run to certain cities of refuge. There was an equal amount of cities of refuge. There's three on the one side of the Jordan where the B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven were, and three on the other side in the main part of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, you know, why does that make sense? How is there, there's a lot more people living in mainland of Eretz Yisrael than living on the other side of the Jordan. So why do they have an equal amount of sanctuary cities? And the Gemara says, because in Gilad, in this area of B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven, there was more murderers, Nefishi Reitzchim. And all the Mepharshim asked, Maral asks, what do you mean there's more killers? You can't have more killers by accident, right? If it's an accident, we're not talking about intentional murders here. We're talking about accidental murders. How do you have more accidental murders in a smaller population than you have in a large population? How does that make sense? So the Maral explains, and he says that the truth is that this idea that a person who kills accidentally goes into Gullus isn't talking about a regular accident. A real honest-to-goodness accident, the person does not have to go to Gullus. The case of a person who goes into Gullus for killing accidentally is specifically a guy who kills in a way of negligence. He's a pesheya. He didn't take proper precautions. And therefore, says Maral, the problem with people living in B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven's area was that they didn't really care about other people as much. They weren't necessarily, you know, bad and going and killing people, God forbid, but they weren't as careful with other people's lives as they should be. They were a little bit more self-obsessed and just, you know, they're on their phone and they're driving and they don't have to worry about everyone else on the street as much. They could be a little bit reckless because they ultimately want to see what's on their phone, right? They weren't as focused on everybody else, and therefore more mistakes, negligent, reckless mistakes happened in their side of town. And says the Ruach Eliyahu that that's exactly what was going on in the story over here when they said, we're not going to go in with you in Eretz Yisrael. Says the Aruch Hayim HaKadosh, look, the B'nai Gad and Reuven said, look, we were here by the battle against Sichon and Og for this side of the Jordan. It wasn't a real battle, it was a joke. A bunch of Jewish guys came, all these mighty warriors of Sichon and Og came, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu got rid of them like that. We didn't have to do anything, so you don't need us to come along with you to conquer Eretz Yisrael. It's not a real battle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is making a miracle. You don't need us to come along. Moshe Rabbeinu said, you're right. Of course we don't need you in any technical sense. But what's going to happen when you're not going to go? Everyone else is going to say, wait, why are they not coming? Oh, maybe it's not such a good idea to go fight. Maybe we won't win this one. Maybe Hashem won't be there for us at this point. You're going to ruin the morale of the nation, right? You're not going to be, you know, people are going to start having questions now, and you're going to ruin everyone else's morale. They might not be able to have the nisim because their betachin will be weakened. So you see, B'nai Gad and Reuven said, Moshe Rabbeinu, you're right that on a very technical level, they don't need your actual help. But on a very nuanced level, you're going to ruin the morale of other people. Now, that's something that you have to think a little deeper for you. You have to be a little bit more sensitive to other people to think about that. And B'nai Gad and Reuben, that wasn't something that they thought about a lot, because they weren't the type of people that were thinking deeply into what other people need. They were kind of, you know, look, as long as they don't overtly step on people's toes and hurt people, they're good. And that's where Moshe is giving them mussar. And no, you have to come along and be there and fight, because people need that morale and that chizak, and you have to think about other people as well. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu gives them mussar furthermore. But when they mention that they're going to build the storage houses for their sheep before taking care of their kids, Moshe Rabbeinu says, again, you're having the same issue. You have to stop and think outside your own box and think about other people more, and then everything else will fall into place. So I want to end off with one last part. In Parshas Maaseh, in the beginning of the Parsha, it says in Pasuk Beis that Moshe wrote down es moitza ehem lamasa ehem, their leavings and their travelings, al pi Hashem. And then it switches and says ve'ele masa ehem, and these are their travelings, lamoitza ehem, for their going out. So the question is, what's these two things of going out and travelings, and why does the order switch? So Dibna Magid gives a mashal. He says, imagine there's a guy and he has a son, and unfortunately his wife passes away. And, you know, he needs to get remarried. So eventually he finds a wife, he gets remarried, and unfortunately this second wife is really, really, really mean to his son. She's a bit of a witch. And he sees after a couple of years that this is really not working, and his son is getting older, and his son hates every second of being home with his other wife. So eventually the father says, okay, look, I'm going to go find him a shidduch. We'll get him married. He'll move out to someone else's house. He'll find a wife and he'll move out. He won't have to deal with her anymore with my new second wife. So eventually the father finds out that in this other city, this is a wonderful family, an amazing family. They're wealthy. They're nice. They're kind. They're learned. Amazing. Beautiful shidduch. He's so excited. He sends a letter. Everyone sends back and forth. They send the references. Beautiful. The shidduch is set up. And the day comes when he tells his son, okay, we're going to meet this other girl. We have the shidduch set up. Let's get on the wagon. Let's go. And they get into the wagon and they leave the city. And every couple of minutes, the boy asks the wagon driver, how far away are we from that city? Right? From the city that we left from his hometown. And meanwhile, the father keeps asking the wagon driver, wait, how much time left till we get to our destination? So eventually, the wagon driver, you know, is like, everyone's asking different questions, and the father and son say, like, why are you so worried about how much distance it is from where we left? And he says, why are you so worried about how much distance it is to where we get to? And says the Dudamaga, the answer is very simple, right? Because the son, he doesn't know what's waiting ahead of him. He never met this girl. He doesn't know anything about the family. He has one thing in mind. He wants to get as far as possible away from his stepmother. Meanwhile, the father, he knows what's coming. He knows that this other town, this shidduch, is an amazing shidduch, and his son's going to have all this wonderful happiness. And he's not so worried about getting away from the stepmother, as he's focused on how soon will we get to that town where my son can finally start his new amazing life. Says the Demaga, that's going in our pasuk. Moshe Rabbeinu is writing that really the main thing is the Masa'ayim, where they're traveling to. The Maitza'ayim is just a vehicle to get to where we want to get to. Maitza'ayim, the Masa'ayim. Whereas Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, they didn't know what Eretz Yisrael was about. They didn't know how amazing the Eretz Yisrael, the goal of where they're going to is. They just knew one thing. They want to get out of Mitzrayim. They want to get away from the Egyptians. So to them, the Masa'ayim was really primarily just for the Maitza'ayim. And the idea that we could take from this is that many times in life, we don't see the full picture. We just know that we have one thing we want to get away from. We're just asking Hashem, you know, please get us away from this problem. But we have to realize that Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's in store for us, and he has so much amazing things that's in store for us. And he's telling us that, wait, the Maitza'ayim is just a step of the way. There's a Masa'ayim, there's a goal in the end. It's going to be so amazing. Just trust me. I'm going to bring you to something so much more amazing. We should all be zeicha to truly have bitachon HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to recognize that we only see short-sighted, but Kadosh Baruch Hu has so much more amazing in store. We should all be zeicha to see that. Bikari. We should have a wonderful Shabbat.